Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I have been unwinding why work was that important to me and why there wasn't balance. And more, it's like, it sounds so cheesy, but I read it somewhere and it was like, how can you be a mother if you can't mother yourself? And it just like really struck me where I was thinking, you know, I'm going to, especially investing money and the whole process of the eggs and it just being such an intense process. Like, if you're doing all of this and it deserves this much energy, time, money, how are you going to support when this dream is fulfilled?
It is truly an honor to welcome an incredible artist and community builder to the podcast today, Jamie Smith. Jamie lives, makes artwork, and runs the supportive group for women artists Thrive in East Vancouver, British Columbia. She creates artwork that layers her memories of traveling, family stories, and lost places. She began her artistic career by completing a Bachelor of Fine Arts at the University of Victoria and later received her Bachelor of Arts education from the University of British Columbia. Her work is heavily influenced by her years abroad in Latin America, living in the Middle East, and backpacking around Eastern Europe. In the spirit of community over competition, Jamie and I have been connecting and trying to learn and grow from each other as we both host community platforms for women artists. We have grown to become friends, and I'm so honored that Jamie is going to open up to you today and share more with us about her career building, Thrive, and her journey with fertility. Thanks already, Jamie, for what I know will be an incredible conversation, and welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Hello. We are actually speaking and not just on recorded audio notes.
I know. It's so nice to be connecting in real time.
Yes. Although, so happy to be here. Thank you.
Yes. Thanks for coming. And I do have to say, I do love WhatsApp and, you know, those little apps that we use, but there's nothing like, you know, the real time connection. I was on a Zoom call with some friends the other day who, like, we've had this Marco Polo thread. And I was telling them, like, I legit was nervous. Like, you know how you meet a friend for the first time, like, for coffee, and you kind of, like, maybe you've been emailing and you get a little nervous and you're like, oh, are they going to like me in real life? I had that feeling from a Zoom call. And I was like, this is so pathetic.
This is the new time, the digital world. Ugh. I'm finding the audio notes really interesting because they're sort of like these little memories, mm-hmm. these sort of drops in time. And especially if there's one where I'm describing something that I'm, you know, have high emotions toward, I'm sad or I'm happy. And then the person responds days later. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh yeah, this was a really big deal to me last week. So yeah. It kind of has shown me my, how I'm handling life in a lot of ways as well.
Well, that's funny because I feel like I just did that to you a few days ago. I was like annoyed about something. Yeah, I was annoyed about something and like, oh, have you ever gone through this? Blah, blah, blah. And like, you know, just now I'm like responding and I was like, wow, maybe I pushed that a little too far.
Well, it is funny when you, and if you've already solved it and right. then to listen to the answer that someone gave you and you're like, oh, I did the opposite thing. Yeah. That's what I always find funny. It's like, oh, you were two hours too late. I've already done the wrong thing. Yes. And here I go.
Yes. Ugh. Well, good and pros and cons of,
yes.
you know, technology, I guess. Okay, Jamie, here we are. Okay. We're already blabbing away and we haven't even.
I know. Gotten into the interview. We got this.
Okay, so Jamie, tell me how you got interested in art. Maybe point me back to something in your childhood that you feel like connects to your art life today.
Yeah, I love this question because it's actually this year really come back full circle. So my mom growing up ran children's folk art classes out of our house.
What?
And yeah, she was, we had I was born in Florida, and then when I was about 7, she moved us up to Canada, to BC, and was single parent and doing her hustling thing. And folk art was huge, and she was arty, but actually, I don't think she had really painted much. She took a couple classes, and then created this awesome little business where she would kit up, the wood pieces. She would cut the wood in our garage. Like herself. Mm-hmm. And then my dad would come over and help cut wood. And anyways, it was just a very funny little family business. And we had a huge craft table, like in our main part of our house. And then kids would come do their classes at like Christmas and Halloween. And so I was right there with her kind of helping. And then later I wanted money in high school. So I like taught some classes myself, which we can see is a huge through line in my story and my life. And so art was always around. Like there was always like brushes and paints around. And it started kind of in that folk art genre. And then now I've started doing my work on wood. And my mom is actually cutting them out for me.
Oh my gosh.
Add that circle.
That's crazy, because I want you to talk about your woodcuts like a little bit later on, because I'm just really interested in them and just the process of them. But that's so cool that, I don't know, it's very full circle. What do you mean by folk art? Like, can you give me an example of
I've been trying to like kind of answer that question for myself, like doing research and that sort of thing. And so like basically that time, so it would have been the 90s, mm-hmm. folk art was acrylic paint on wood pieces. Like it was very functional. So it was like a wood paper towel holder or a chest. Mm. And it was all these sort of country themes. And the color palette was sort of the barn red. And so it was really popular at the time. So like probably a lot of people listening, they're like, oh, my mom did that, or they may have done it at a point. And it was like tons of roosters and Santas and snowmen.
Black bears and
black
stuff
bears,
like that.
Yeah. So I look at it as sort of this, like, it was sort of decorative pieces, but they typically would have a function. Mm-hmm. So it was, cause that was a big struggle for me then going into art school, was what does this do? And, what is art and why is it important? Because, you know, at that time we didn't have a ton of money. So like we weren't buying original art. So I've been on a journey myself finding out what is the purpose of art? Why does it have value? Because I kind of came out of this like very, yes, you need a box. Well, let's decorate the box, but use the box is sort of the idea.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. Just kind of thinking about that, and I don't know, some of those things that you learn and that you like end up breaking down, you know, like later in life and dismantling, even down to like specifics about form and function, you know, and art. It's really interesting. Okay, Jamie, describe your art that you're currently making now. Not the teenager folk art, Jamie, but the the current professional artist. Tell me what your art looks like, maybe for somebody who's never seen it before. Talk about your materials and your medium and your process a little bit for us.
Yeah, so I do sort of two kind of lines of work. So pen and ink mostly. Really all in black ink. So it's quite graphic, and they're drawings and all tons of florals. I like archways. I'll put a vase. I'll put urns, dark windy roads, dark pools, and sort of make these fantastical landscapes. And I am really interested in Art Nouveau and Art Deco. So pieces of that will come in. And then most recently this year, I started using, you know, all these symbols that I was loving to put in the drawings and actually taking them out. So like the egg symbol I use a lot. I use a lot of vases, and I actually started to pull those out and cut them on wood. So my mom, Mary Smith, she got really excited and really into it. And she's like, I can make those for you. So I've now spent, and it's escalated even further. Now I'm doing like bits of things and flowers and leaves all out of wood and trying to make them even more complicated. And those ones I'm using, I'm dipping my toe into color. And I used to paint big abstracts and stuff in art school, but I've kind of, I scaled it all down and now I'm very hesitant about bringing it all in. So right now I'm on to blue, but it's just blue and white. And it's sort of the Delft pottery ceramic what I'm looking at. So I'm using color, but I'm really using one color right now. So we'll get there. And I don't even know if it's necessary because I'm loving just playing with like pattern and bold spaces as tones in a way. Mm. So yeah, was that clear?
Yeah, very clear. Okay. I love all the descriptions. And did you say you use ink or is it just pen? Like, do you use ink and a brush?
So I was using the Micron mm-hmm. pens. Mm-hmm. And then I was using acrylic ink and painting in the big sort of, because in some of the drawings, there's quite a big area of black.
Yeah.
And then over Christmas, when I was trying to take time off and just like let the creative juices flow and mm-hmm. wander, I watched this documentary on one of my favorite artists, Aubrey Beardsley. And he was, you know, back in the day, and he's using like actual fountain pen with his like feather, I can mm-hmm. imagine as the quill mm-hmm. and dipping into ink. So now I've gotten myself a fountain pen and putting the ink in it. And now my line work is completely matching my big ink pools, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I was struggling with the other drawings because there were areas where the pen had a shine to the ink that mm-hmm. the acrylic ink didn't. So it was a real problem that I was like, wasn't sure how to resolve. And I just loved this moment where I was like, why don't you go back to the master of these things and see how you did it? So that's my latest thing. And the hard thing is that the pens provide so many different sizes mm-hmm. and I rely on them a lot. And so the one fountain pen, I might have to maybe get a couple more, or I'm going to have to like really learn how to use that, the tip of it, to make it more dynamic. So there, I'm still working through it.
Hmm. Amazing. Well, I love your work in the detail. Like I'm looking through some of the works on your website, and actually I had not previously made it through all your collections where you do have color. Right now I'm looking at Rituals and Remains, and you are such a great colorist. Like, tell me about that decision to pare it down. Like, I'm just curious, you know, kind of what led you to that journey to like stick with black and white. And so much that I feel like that's what you're kind of known for right now.
Yeah. I mean, as we talk more, I mean, you've kind of said in the intro, but a part of my story is also starting Thrive. So mm-hmm. When I was making work, and then when I started Thrive, like, I had no idea the time mm-hmm. that I was that I was gifting up to the universe. Yeah. So things became, art just became on the back burner, and Thrive ran out of my studio. So I was always, you know, working on things. But Ritual Remains especially is from that time. And there's probably only 8 drawings in that series. It was for a show at the time. And I think that took me 6 months mm-hmm. kind of thing, you know, by mm-hmm. the time. Whereas now I'm making work, I'm trying to do 3 days a week in the studio and 2 days of working on all the other things. Mm. So I think a big part of the story is that I'm just making so much more in my current style. But I had this big transitional point. I went to Australia for a month with for a friend's wedding and spent a month on my own, basically traveling after the wedding. And I was so burnt out. I'd made that series of Ritual and Remains, and I was just, nothing was working. But a big part of that was like, I wasn't investing time to work through it, right? Mm-hmm. The only way past is through, and I wasn't giving it that. And so I had brought all this stuff to do, and it sat in my suitcase, and I was out, and I love to journal and read. So I had all my stuff sitting in this garden and all I had was a black pen, and I had literally journaled all the things, read all the things, and all there was left to do was draw. And I used that black pen and I just got so into it and I freed myself. I let myself just draw flowers and leaves. And I think I was, you know, the trauma from art school of saying that your art has to be a certain way. I have doodled flowers my whole life. And I just, to me, that was just, I couldn't do that, you know, as real art. And I had all these hangups about it. And it was the most freeing thing. So I filled up this little journal I had with me and then came back. And I think I was just so tired. And so also I give so much advice to other artists. And I remember thinking, if an artist told you that if they should draw flowers or not draw flowers, what would your answer? And it would always be just draw, like just get to work. So I did. And then that, and I think I just so loved finding what I wanted to make, and the black pen just worked, that I'm finally at a point, you know, a few years later where I'm like ready to even iterate on that. Cause it was just, it filled me up the way with the single color, I guess.
I love that. I love that. Okay. So since you already brought it up, I want to hear more about the woodcuts, like just kind of, when did you decide to sort of break out of the frame, you know, and create something that actually has this physical shape? And could you talk a little bit about, you know, the process of making those? And I don't know, just I'm interested. Like, I love that you already shared that they're a collaboration with your mom, but making something like that, I feel like I could have the idea and then I would be like, ugh, but I have to figure out how to like cut this shape and, you know, I don't know who to go to. And like you have your mom to do that, but I'm sure it's still, you know, it had to be something that like pushed you. So just kind of want to hear more about the making of those.
I think cause I was working really hard on what is my visual vocabulary. I think I was so relieved that I had finally found my voice. Like I had finally, like, it just like it clicked. And for anyone that is struggling to find that, or anyone that knows that feeling, it's so crazy. And if you're struggling to find it, just know that just keep making work and it will happen. And you'll just know this feeling where you're thinking, you know, these themes won't run out because these themes are me. And before I would make work for a show and I would create the work within the theme of the show. And I felt like I could do that in art school. I had assignments and I could do that, but I never was someone that naturally was just, these are the things that I draw. These are the things that I believe. I was just a late bloomer in finding my voice. And so when this all kind of struck me, I really wanted to pull apart. And I worked a lot with Penny Lane Shen, who is an artist consultant, and she's a big believer in visual vocabulary. And when you start repeating things to kind of unpack why, because it will help you in writing, it will help you in research. And so I was pulling out, I had these cards that I made, and the cards would be the vase on it. And I would write notes as things came to me about why this vase is important. And I had, it was like a deck. I just loved it. One day I'd love to make tarot cards or something, because I just loved having this deck. And if I found a pattern I loved, I'd put it in the deck and kind of think about my why. And so then I think because of my background with my mom and the folk art, and I'm in a studio with an awesome artist, Rebecca Chaperon. And she does a lot of painting on wood. And it was really natural to me, where I was like, imagine I could pull out these visual vocabulary, pull out these pieces. And I'm in Vancouver. And so I'm in a pretty small apartment, and I have a lot of art over the years, which my art collection is like my dearest possessions. And I was finding that all these little collections, my gallery walls, I just wanted to have things that weren't square and rectangle to sort of sit with it. And I remember just being, I would love like a vase, because I'm obsessed with vase. And I was like, wait a second, I should make the vase. So it came out of, yeah, it was a process, but I just love seeing gallery walls that have different bits added, you know, vintage things or small little tiny pieces of art and big pieces of art. So, that it kind of started, I did four, I pulled out four symbols, two vases, an egg, and sort of this floral bloom. And I was like, I'll start with four. And I got them cut. And then my mom just cut me four of each. And so I had 16. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I want to do these or if I like them. She was very, you know, very supportive, amazing. But having 16 was amazing because I've just finished them now, you know, after almost a year. And it just was a way to like, there became studies, you know, try out this idea, try out, before I was really stuck to the shapes being this certain design. And now I will paint, you know, an image. I'll use it as a panel of wood, not follow the shape and stuff. So I've been really playing with what is this frame that I've created as a new shape. So
I love that. I love that so much. And I agree, the kind of the collection of a gallery wall when it's all square objects, it does get a little old, you know, and the, I don't know, it just feels like the same old Tetris, you know, just kind of like fitting your pieces like on a wall. And, you know, we moved last year, so like we've had a new house to kind of arrange art. And it's, I love like a gallery wall that combines a bunch of different sizes and like mediums of things. So I think just even from an art collector standpoint, it's really appealing to sort of have this like, you know, different kind of piece that can still function in the same way, but it brings, yeah, like a contrasting aesthetic. It's really nice.
Yeah. I've had to learn how to photograph them and place them within the gallery wall, because I think as a collector, it's hard to see it. And so that was kind of at the beginning, I was so excited about them. And I remember posting it and someone commented, oh, wow, I thought these were pins. Like they thought they were tiny objects. And to me, it was just so obvious, you know, that this was going to go in the gallery wall. So I think I've really worked on my website this year and really trying to tell the story of what they are. And now I'm getting into stacking wood, and I did a bunch more designs. And so my Mary Smith has got to work with different sizes of wood. And sometimes I feel a little bit like I don't want them to be cheesy, or the folk art side is like, you know, that was already done. And then now I hear those things and I just laugh because I'm like, this is just the critic, you know, that stops you before you even get started. And you'll only know if it's cheesy until it's done and it's cheesy, and then great, lesson learned. But I've been watching what I say to myself creatively, and I find it so interesting, the stories that I have and we all have about our work.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, and like, I don't know, just leaning into sort of what authentically is, you know, your story to tell, I feel like is really, you know, what we can hope for at the end of the day, you know?
Totally.
Jamie, tell me what an average day in your life looks like right now. And I, again, as you mentioned, we're going to talk about Thrive and community building sort of towards the end, but just hearing you kind of flesh out some of your, you know, your process and your art practice got me interested in like how you're structuring your time. And I know, you know, systematizing and like project management is something that you're just so good at. So I think this would be a good question for you to answer for everyone listening.
Yeah, for sure. I'm always adjusting and I'm always coming up with the next best way to do things. But consistently what I found is I need to have admin stuff separate than studio. So I'm actually much more comfortable doing the admin stuff, which I know a lot of artists, that's the last thing they want to do, but I actually find it because again, I look at all of these as muscles, right? As muscles that we've toned and trained. And so I've been out of sort of a full-time practice that So it's just, that's a new muscle that I'm trying to train. So to do that, I have to kind of really divide up that time. So Monday and Tuesday, I am at my house and we have a second bedroom. And so I'm able to use that to do sort of Thrive. I'm also making classes right now for Skillshare. So I'm doing that kind of curriculum. It's creative thinking, but it's so computer based. And it's also just so much organization and lesson flow. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I have to say I'm going to the studio, and I will go and pick up my studio mate, and she is happy to walk, but I insist that I go pick her up because it forces me to get out the door. Mm-hmm. Because I just find it so easy to, you know, I should clean up a bit, I should do this, mm-hmm. to not treat it as sacred as it is, which is a job. Mm-hmm. So I mean, an optimal week is those 3 days in the studio, and you know, completely honest, it usually something happens in there and I'm 2 days there. But it's amazing the things I can get done in the studio because I cherish that time so much. I do a lot of prep work and stuff at home. So I'll do like drawings in front of the TV, and I'll work at night on art stuff. But then it's the studio is where I have like sort of that execution time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So does that mean that you are like not on email Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or do you still have a section of your day where you're doing admin stuff, or is it you really try to stick to like just Monday and Tuesday?
So I have great question. I have an autoresponder on my Thrive email, I think on my other one too, that says this inbox is only checked on Tuesdays, to give people the know that I'm in and out. I typically in the morning will leave time, probably 15 minutes, to just check on the different platforms, mm-hmm. To make sure that, like, you know, everything's fine. Everything always is. But I'm finding that if I'm in a rush, that is the thing I cut, and I'm pretty strict about it. So, and then I don't take my laptop to the studio is a big part of it. Mm. So the studio, I'll have my phone. I listen to audiobooks when I work. Mm-hmm. And so I'll have it there, and I might do like a story on Instagram, but of my artwork, it's nothing. I try to keep it super focused. So that's the ideal. And I took off email off my phone. I have no notifications on my phone, and I took off all email. The only thing I have on my phone is Instagram.
Yeah, I took off email. I took email off my phone like on Christmas break this past year, which, you know, it's crazy. It's already like 3 months ago. But man, it is so life-changing. Like
The space it creates that you don't think, like, I never thought about it in those terms, but it's just, I've had it off for a year, and sometimes I can tell my hand is searching for the icon for the email.
Yeah.
Like, it is insane how addicted
it is. It's crazy. And truly, and I had learned this, I had heard, can't think of her last name. Elise Blaha. On Instagram, she's Elise Joy. So I always want to say Elise Joy, but she had talked about taking email off her phone and just how when she did it, it was because she never had good responses when she was using email on her phone. All it did was like make her anticipate responding, you know, like it wasn't like she would read an email and be like, oh crap, I need to like respond to that. And so then she's just like worried about like the next time she can get on her computer to like type out this response. Whereas if she just waited till she had time to open up her computer, like she wouldn't be wasting that headspace, you know, kind of like worrying about the next time or like getting frustrated, you know, with whatever you're doing and just trying to like just, I don't know, just that like pushing of, you know, your mind, like distracting your mind away from something else and like constantly pushing you back to the computer. Like that's what I really like about not having email on my phone, because I really identified with that.
Well, it always keeps you at the whim of something else.
Yes.
Like it takes away your choice. And that's, you know, why notifications, because I want to choose to engage with the platform or mm-hmm. choose to respond, but you're always at the, especially with email, because it's not, you're also like, it's that other person.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just noise. So
my phone
number is everywhere. I always figure if there was and I don't know what an art emergency would be.
Yeah.
So I have yet to have one happen, but you know, I've had to build. Why I'm saying all this too is because it's been a practice of remembering these things, because mm-hmm. as an A-type and recovering workaholic, it's hard, you know, to keep these boundaries for me.
Yeah, no, I feel the same. And I get a lot of self-worth from being productive.
Yes.
Yes. So like, I know it all comes back to that. Like even just the flipping and scrolling, like feeling like you can contribute and like give somebody a boost of encouragement for the comment or like all of it. It feels, yeah, very much a part of our identity. I wanted to ask you, because you're kind of, I have always been a no notifications person. Like I've never had notifications turned on for any of my apps or anything, but I've never had texts turned off. Do you do that?
I don't do that. And I've thought about it in the studio doing that. One thing I really like right now is that I've got the wireless AirBud like headphones.
Mm-hmm.
And Siri will read me my texts when they come in, which might be annoying for some people. But I like it because I would check my phone to see if someone texted.
Mm-hmm.
And just especially if like it wasn't going well on mm-hmm. the paper, you know?
Yep.
And then, but I like it when it comes in, I hear the thing and I'm like, oh, that's, I don't know. And then I can put it away, like, you know, and mm-hmm. if I have to respond right away, but there's very few things like that. So that's actually kind of solved my texting, constantly clicking the phone to look at has really helped me.
Yeah. I mean, I can identify that with like you're frustrated or you're bored. I would say bored, but I'm never bored, but you know, yeah. You're like, I don't know, you're in a negative feeling. And so you pick up the phone. Like I definitely can identify with that. But I liked what you said about, you know, if it's important, people will call, or even saying mm-hmm. like, call me if you need to talk to me about something. Because mm-hmm. because, you know, of course, in my head, I'm like, I can't turn my text notifications off because, like, I have kids and a partner.
Yeah.
But I'm like, but if I just told John to call me, like,
mm-hmm. yeah,
I could turn my texts off. Because I feel like texts, I get so many texts from people all day. And I feel like that, it's like I pick it up to read the text and then I get sucked in and I'm like, oh, let me open yeah. Instagram. Let me open, you know, Marco Polo. And then it's like 30 minutes go by and I have my phone in yeah. my hand and I'm like, what the hell? Like, you know, so I just wonder about that. Like, could I just, I don't know, have my text notifications off and people call me if they need me.
Yeah. And the thing that for me that I hate with text messages, and maybe it's just because I'm missing a step here, is that if you open a text, I love an email that you can do unread, because that's how I keep track of people, is that I read an email and if I'm not going to respond, I leave it as unread and I know that I need to respond to them. And so with text, I find I click the text to read it and then I don't want to respond right away. Again, mm-hmm. it's keeping like not being at the whim of other people and other people's needs. And so what I like about hearing the text is that I hear it, but it doesn't show that I've, like on my phone, it doesn't yeah. say that I've read it. And so then I know later when I'm taking a break or I'm having lunch, then I can respond then.
Yeah, you know I mean? I feel the same.
It shows that you've,
yep.
yeah, because then I lose track of text.
Yeah, the same. Like I might read it, but then I forget to respond and then I go back and then I feel bad and then you feel like you have to apologize. And mm-hmm. yeah, whereas if I just didn't open it until, you know, I was ready to, or if I opened it, but I could like mark it as unread and go back to it. So you knew. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause in WhatsApp you can now, you can go click, swipe it and say unread. And that's really helped because then it will keep it kind of green.
Mm-hmm.
But in text, I haven't seen a way to do that. And it's funny, these little things, but it makes a huge difference on your day. Cause if someone asks me a question, then exactly what you said, I'm like, okay, I'll go through the steps to get you that answer. And half an mm-hmm. hour later, I forget what I was doing to start with.
Half an hour later, you're watching TikTok videos and whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Oh, and I wanted to say that I thought this question was so funny right now because everything I just said is basically in 5 days going to be a complete lie because in 5 days we get a puppy. And everything I have built, my whole schedule, my whole way of being is about to be unwound. So we'll have to do a follow-up in 6 months and you can laugh at me.
No, I think you'll have a phase where it'll be like you're on puppy vacation, but then the puppy will adapt to your life, I think.
I think.
That's my hope for you.
I hope.
But I am excited for you to get a puppy.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
I'm delighted to share that this episode of the Artist Mother Podcast is sponsored by an artist mother and tax expert, Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax. Is your creative practice gaining steam? Maybe you just got a big grant or a big show. You're excited to get to work, but a nagging feeling tells you that there are some tax issues that could hurt you. What you don't know might actually be holding you back from all that you can accomplish. You just want to get down to the studio and do the work you love, but finances and tax concerns are dragging you down. Thankfully, Sunlight Tax is here for you. Artist and tax pro Hannah Cole started Sunlight Tax to empower creative people with the tax and money tools you need so you can have more money, more time, and make a bigger impact with your work. Who doesn't want that? Sunlight Tax offers an annual membership called Money Bootcamp, which is tailored to your busy creative life to teach you targeted skills for your financial health and taxes. Hannah guides you through the pitfalls into simple systems so you can stay on track, start investing in yourself, and get back to the studio without getting bogged down. Right now, listeners of the Artist Mother Podcast can get a free artist tax deduction guide by going to sunlighttax.com/artistmother. That's sunlighttax.com/artistmother. Thank you, Hannah, for providing so much to artists and helping us through with all of our financial concerns. So reassuring to have experts like you we can trust and we know are looking out for us. Head to sunlighttax.com to find out more about everything Hannah has to offer, and don't forget your free artist tax deduction guide just for our community at sunlighttax.com/artistmother. Okay, sorry, didn't mean to like go down the social media diversion train, but you know, I know that's like, just as you know, community leaders and like professional artists, like those are two things that we've connected on, is just like managing communication, because it's like
it's huge.
Yeah. Okay, but really you're here to talk about something kind of specific to the artist mother journey, and I'm so grateful you know, that you're willing to talk about your fertility journey with us on the podcast. And I just want to make sure that our audience understands that you and I are actually friends, and you've agreed to share publicly about this, you know, just because
you're not just springing it on me.
Right. Like, hey, Jamie, tell me about your fertility journey.
Yeah. Don't know.
Yeah. Because I do feel like I was thinking, you know, when I was prepping for this conversation, I was thinking back to episode 52 with my friend, artist Pam Taylor. And that episode is called, like, Ready or Not, Choosing to be Child-Free. Mm-hmm. Because Pam is, like, very publicly said, like, that she doesn't want to have kids. And, like, on the podcast, you know, we talked about just kind of how – just kind of the burden of that conversation – as it relates to like societal norms, you know, and mm-hmm. just how like she's had a lot of people like shame her or like assume that she's having kids and like asking like, when is it going to happen? And when, like, and she's married, you know, so I think that's part of it too. But I don't know. I was just curious to start, like, if you have any of that, like, ickiness of people like asking you things that you feel are like not in their place to ask, or has it been like, you know, pretty open and you haven't like had some of those like taboo, you know, stereotypical conversations with people?
Well, a huge thing is I haven't left the house in a year. So
that's true. COVID has helped.
I haven't met strangers. So that has really helped.
Yeah.
But no, I don't really relate to that because I am still young, and I put the like air parentheses, but I'll claim it. I'm still young. I'm 34. So I'll be 35 in June. And the other thing is that I am super vocal about. So really my story is that I froze my eggs 2 years ago now. So I was 33 and I'm really vocal about it. And it's why I was so happy to be asked to come and talk to you on here, because I just think it's so important for women, but all people, but women, to know that we're just at this time in history where we can have control of our bodies and fertility and our destinies. And it's so wonderful and it's something to be celebrated. And so I'm very forthcoming with that information. Like, I will just drop it into a random conversation because I want it to be mainstream. I want it to be, and honestly, it's changed even the last 2 years. I'll say it and whoever's around me will say, oh, a friend of mine did that. Like, it's becoming way more commonplace.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really, I feel like I haven't. And the other thing for me is that I do want a family, and I'm actively working. Like, me freezing my eggs was because, so in my situation, I froze my eggs because I had a very low level of AMH. So, AMH. Anyways, hormone that your eggs give off. I went and had testing when I was 32, and I was told that I have very few eggs. So I will menopause when I'm like early 40s, or like probably when I'm 40. So that was huge because I had gone in at the time. I was basically full on workaholic. I was exhausted. And a friend of mine who was an entrepreneur had said she wished she had done this. And it just got in my head. And I finally went and did it. And I walked in just so arrogant. I just figured I'm an overachiever, and I thought my ovaries would be an overachiever. I thought all my parts down there were going to overachieve. And turns out, no, they were not. So it was really like heartbreaking. I was, you know, at the time so single and very focused on career. And so, the doctor said, you know, you just can't have the plan that you're going to wait and get pregnant when you're 40. He's like, fertility is, you know, it's very hard to say. There's so many miracle stories and all the things, but he's like, medically, it's probably not in your cards. And I was just devastated because it really, for me, it was in that moment that I realized, oh, I want kids. And I had gone in even not sure. I was just doing it to sort of give myself a pat on the back, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I heard that and I realized, I was like, no, I want a kid. And so he's like, yeah, you kind of have your options are freeze your eggs or have kids right now, and you can use a sperm donor or, you know, and it was very overwhelming at the time.
Oh my gosh.
And I left just kind of in a daze. And then I decided that the only action that I could take to kind of help my future self and my future family was to freeze my eggs. And so I was able, and a big thing to know is that I was able to do that financially.
Mm-hmm.
And I had help as well from my parents, helped me. And so, you know, I do not take that lightly because it is a big cost, and it's also physically, you know, you're putting the needles in of your own hormones, and it's a big process, but it's done within 6 weeks. And then for me, that was just so empowering to have the eggs there for me. And I might never use those eggs because with pregnancy, you only need one egg, and I currently have eggs. so I might just get pregnant naturally. Mm-hmm. But that for me was the only thing I could do to be proactive with the information that I got at the time. So yeah, so I've been really open with that story, and I've actually now had 4 or 5 women that I've like mentored through their egg freezing.
That's amazing.
Because I knew no one at the time who mm-hmm. had ever done it. And it's a wild ride. And a few women are close friends that after my story, they went and did it. And then some have been friends of friends and we've just met over coffee or Zoom and kind of give the lay of the land, because it's really not that bad if you know what you're getting into. It just feels so, there's so much information when you first start this.
Well, and good thing you had that friend who, you know, mentioned it to you.
Yeah. I think what's been shocking in this whole process is the little amount of knowledge as a woman mm-hmm. that I have known about my body and fertility, and like education wise, and just think about sex ed and whenever we would have done that in school. And now I've learned about hormones. Like there's a book called The Woman Code. If anyone's looking to learn about hormones, and it doesn't really have anything to do with fertility, it's more about just general health. And, mm-hmm. So I've been on a whole journey of learning all of this, but I was just sitting there in shock where I was like, there's a hormone that you can tell how many eggs I have. And I didn't even really know all the parts. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a real shame. And I think we as women can, we have so much cool stuff happening, you know, our mm-hmm. periods, our whole thing. And we need to like be way more honoring of that and ourselves every month, not just fertility months when we want to get pregnant.
I love that, Jamie. I'm curious, like, so you know, like, did you go to just regular 1-year physicals and, you know, doctors never really said, like, are you thinking about having kids?
So I haven't had a family doctor since I was early 20s. And so I think it's part of just like being really focused on my job. And mm-hmm. I mean, I traveled a lot, and then I came back and started my own business. So really most of my 20s were, not, you know, nothing was carefully like looked after. Mm-hmm. And, so yeah. And I think too, I definitely had talked to doctors and stuff, but this was like, I had to go to my doctor and ask for this blood test, and I paid for the blood test, and I had to go to a fertility clinic mm-hmm. to get the results. So that's another thing, is I don't know if everyone knows, and women know that they could do this, but it would never have been offered to me unless that friend had said, oh yeah, it's a blood test and this is how you do it.
So. Yeah. It's just interesting, 'cause I'm just thinking like, you know, if I was to show up and I'm 34 and single at the doctor, and it's not like the doctor really knows anything about your love life necessarily, or, you know, your like aspirations to be a mom or not. But I don't know, like I would hope that they would say something like, hey, by the way, you know, like, if you're interested in having kids, now's your window to explore like where you're at with that. I don't know. But, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, I guess, I don't know. There's a lot of things that they could ask you that we don't get, you know, we're not privileged to have all of the information. And yeah, it's well, like up to you to kind of, I guess, pursue that.
There's just so many things that are also just not like ignored for women, basically. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the medical like exams we have, the medical tests we have, are all the research is done on male bodies. Mm-hmm. So it's just really finding a doctor. And so now I have a doctor that I really love, and like she had given me the referral, and then I had my appointment with the specialist, and like 2 weeks later she called me to say, how are you doing? I got the results back and knew that it wasn't great, you know? Mm. And so building relationships there. And now I am getting married and we are going to start a family. And so I had her to go back to because she knows this history. So I think it's just really, but it's all about self-advocacy and just making sure that you're asking questions and getting like as much information as you can. The thing in my case that's interesting is that if I hadn't got that test, I could have like, I still might get pregnant completely naturally. That's the hope, right? Because the next step to do with those eggs would be do IVF. So that is sort of the second. So when someone says I'm doing IVF, they're first doing an egg retrieval, then the eggs are getting inseminated, and then the eggs are going back in, and then they're hopefully pregnant and having the baby, right? So freezing the eggs, you're just doing that half the process, which I didn't know any of this. So I have done half my process. So if I wanted to use those eggs, we could use them and try to get pregnant that way. But I also just might get pregnant. And so like you could have the same results I had, but you have already had your kids because you only need one egg. So it's a funny one because these tests also, a lot of people might have certain conditions, but if you start having kids young enough, you'll never know that. And that's great because it didn't matter. So it's just when you're in sort of this, you know, I was 33, I was 32 and then frozen at 33, but my career trajectory and everything was, you know, having kids in my early 40s, which I think we're just at this, like, especially as female entrepreneurs, it's sort of this do it all and you can have it all and all those things. But I guess for me, it really was an interesting one where biology and like just the basic human experience of having a baby like brought me back to earth of like, you're not in control of everything and you're gonna have to listen to your body at some point. So it's been a journey. Let's put it that way.
Well, you brought up something that I would love to hear you talk about, just in relationship to, you know, having a career and then like having kids. And I was just wondering, like, did you ever consider not having kids, because you are a female like business person and artist, like, and for, you know, how many centuries, decades, like those things have sort of like worked against each other, in terms of like sustainability and, you know, figuring out how to make it all work, you know? I'm just curious to hear, like, if you've looked around and like, you know, kind of thought like, I don't know if I want to do that, if I want to have kids, because it's just so much that I want to do like with like work wise in the world.
Well, and I think that was the biggest, like, this whole journey was actually a wake up call, because when I went into that appointment, I wasn't sure if I wanted kids. And it was because I didn't know how you would do all of the things. Like, I didn't know how that would look. I also didn't have a partner. So it was just very kind of like nebulous. And then just very like, am I going to give up all these things for something? I don't know what that would look like. And it just was a lot of unknowns. And then having the results come and realize that I wasn't in control of everything and that my body was part of this, is I kind of look at that for me was like the beginning of like unwinding a lot of really bad habits. And it always, now when I see posts, you know, do it all, have it all, I'm like, I have like a physical reaction of like, no, don't. Like, that's exhausting. And do you want to do that? Is that, you know, I guess to kind of put it better to said, is that I have been unwinding why work was that important to me and why there wasn't balance, and more is, it's like, this sounds so cheesy, but I read it somewhere and it was like, how can you be a mother if you can't mother yourself? And it just like really struck me where I was thinking, you know, I'm going to, especially investing money and in, and the whole process of the eggs and it just being such an intense process. It's like, if you're doing all of this and it deserves this much energy, time, money, how are you going to support when this dream is fulfilled? You know, what, because I, when he said to me, like, you could have a kid right now, you could have a sperm donor, you could have a kid. I was just imagining what that would look like. You know, I'm working 6 days a week. I'm going to events 4 days a week. It was just insane. And I was like, no, I really couldn't. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, I couldn't in, you know, what I pictured that to be. So anyways, roundabout way to say is that I now am not trying to do it all. I'm trying to spend some time working on community building, and Thrive looks very different than it did at the time. We had meetings going, you know, 21 meetings a month and over 250 members. And I had a team and a co-founder and all these things. And now it's an online community. And I do Tuesday mornings, a thing called Tea Time, where we work through something together. And I also am making these classes, and I'm in my studio, and I now have my Blair, my man, and I spend a lot of time with him. We're now getting a puppy, and it's hard because I feel these zany old habits come to play where I'm like, I got to grow this business. I got to do this. I got to do that. And it's just always comes down to like, what's the goal? Mm-hmm. And those, I call them my five golden eggs, and my five golden eggs are there, and I want to enjoy every step of it. Mm. And so, yeah.
I love that. Tell me more about how this whole process like started to show up in your work. Because, you know, really, again, it's kind of been paralleled with like this growth in your work and developing your visual language was kind of paralleled with this journey. So like, yeah, I just want to hear more about kind of the symbolism that you've been working with.
Yeah. So, I mean, never in my life did I think I would be drawing eggs, but my five golden eggs are in many of the drawings, and they to me really represent, they represent of course like birth and new beginnings, but it's more about me, not actually about a child yet. So I think it's, they're everywhere because they are also about choice and being a woman right now. I think it's just such an amazing time. I think I feel very lucky and grateful. And I also have a lot in the work, or there'll be roads or doorways. And I always think of it as like different paths to take. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I at first, I really cursed knowing this information. So when I was, you know, found this out 32, so single, so not in a place where the idea of having a kid made sense to me. Mm-hmm. I was just really mad that I had found out this information and now I had to deal with it. And I felt upset because I was like, well, is that now what it's all going to be about, trying to have a kid? And I'm, you know, I just, it was so not where I was at. And I feel so lucky now to have had more information, because it kind of started on this journey of, well, now you get a choice. Because if I didn't know and I decided to wait till I was later in life, later in my 30s, you know, how sad would I have been mm-hmm. for myself that I had kind of worked through, like literally worked through those years, that I could have had a chance for that. Mm-hmm. And I believe family can look anyway. There's still, you know, a chance that we might not get pregnant, and fertility is such, you just can't know anything. So, but I know from that experience that I want a family. Mm-hmm. So whether that's adopting or that's being amazing, like godparents to a friend's child, whatever it is, we're having a family. And, mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I roundabout answered your question.
Yeah. Yeah. Just talking about how it kind of creeped its way into your art and you started engaging with that. You did, definitely, for sure. So interesting, Jamie. And yeah, I just think, again, you know, just want to say, like, I love that conversation around like mothering yourself. And I love how it's been like, I just love how people work through transformation in different ways. You know, like these big things happen and we might be disappointed, but the people I really admire, like, use it kind of as a catalyst for growth, right? And for like really reevaluating kind of what's important, and then like shifting back and saying like, you know, I don't have everything figured out. Like, I need to make changes, and here's things that are coming up that I need to like tackle head on, even though they're hard. I don't know. I love hearing about that kind of stuff because it's how I feel about my life. Like, and the people that I admire the most are those people that are willing to like kind of push through and keep making things better, you know,
learning. And doing this with you, I've, you know, thought a lot about these themes and stuff, but then kind of pulling it together into the narrative. And it's been so interesting to realize how much like I became a parent, mm-hmm. you know, the day I found out that, or the day this all started, and just, but I became almost like a parent to myself, and mm-hmm. I became like, I'm such a better partner. And I even going out and dating, to find my man, I was a different person because I was going out there to be like, yeah, I'm just finding a partnership that wants a family with mm-hmm. me, you know? And, mm-hmm. So it's been transformation on all sides, and we don't even have a kid yet. So I can mm-hmm. only imagine what parenting brings.
Oh my gosh. You wait, you wait. Yeah. You we'll think you know puppy. Yourself now.
Yeah. We'll start with puppy and then hopefully kid.
Yes. I love it. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Thrive before we wrap up. I, you know, just love that we have this in common, and I'm so grateful that, you know, like we're, you know, specifically, you know, trying to like work through some of these things together as peers rather than, you know, me being over here in the U.S. and looking at you and being like, ugh. She has too many artist mothers in her community. Like, they should be coming over here and, you know, like, whatever. Like, you know.
Yeah.
I know there's those things that come up and we feel like the scarcity issue and.
One day we'll get a system and it'll be a website and they have to tell us things about them and then they're sent to different yep. communities.
That's right. You know, which one fits your needs?
Yeah, exactly. I'll take her. You take her.
Yes. Yeah, so I just love that, like, we're, you know, we've just kind of been tackling some things together as, like, peers, and it just feels really good. But anyway, I just wanted to hear you talk a little bit more about Thrive and kind of, like, what inspired you to start it and maybe, you know, what are some of the biggest wins that you feel like you've had, like, the biggest accomplishments that you've had with Thrive?
Yeah, Thrive's been... there's a ride, you know, mm-hmm. there's like know thyself, a push to all the limits. So Thrive will be 6 this summer. So 6 years. And, I've had a co-founder through most of it. I've had employees, interns, all the things. Now Thrive is just me, which has been so interesting because that's how it started. Mm-hmm. So it was literally me being an artist in Vancouver feeling lonely and like really unsure of how to make it a career. But what I was good at was my background in teaching and being bold enough to ask people questions. And so I just got a group of, there were 6 of us on the first meeting, and I'd heard the word mastermind from other like entrepreneur communities. And it was just, you know, a group where you sit around and kind of help each other. I thought this would be really, really useful in the art world. Mm-hmm. So that 6 grew to the mastermind groups. Like I kind of mentioned, it was like 21 or 25 groups a month. And then all over the world. So we would do them on Zoom and had a leadership team, which I think when you say like, what are they most proud of? I think is just like having such an awesome leadership team, having artists that, because we would put, you know, feedback after each meeting and just seeing, I couldn't be at every meeting, so I would read these charts of notes and just seeing women, you know, start, it was a year-long program, and start and be at one's way, and then everything be different by the end. Mm. And even like small changes, huge. So super fulfilling, amazing, super time-consuming, like needed my full eyes and ears and life and soul. And as we all heard, I've been trying to turn a new leaf. So it got to a point where it just felt too much. And so me and Tara, the co-founder, we parted ways. She wanted to get back in the studio full time, and she's doing that. It's amazing paper art. And we kind of took it apart to be like, what is it? And it's still an awesome community. So we have an online platform called the Thrive Network, and it's $25 a month, and people come on and share advice. And so it operates just without the meetings. And then I do a Tuesday session, and I'm loving it because it's back to sort of where I started, which was just connecting people, sharing information. And I laughed when you said, when we were talking, and you're like, I didn't mean us to talk about social media and time. And I'm like, that's all the stuff I care about. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you do this? How do you do that? And that is the heart of Thrive, is always being curious, asking questions, supporting other women, and just all trying to, you know, reach our goals and our art businesses and our art practices. So it's still doing those things. So I'm still here for as long as it will do those things, which is amazing.
I love that. Just personally, I want to hear you kind of break this down a little bit more. You've alluded to it, but just want to know, like, what do you think the hardest thing about growing community is? Like, what are some of the biggest challenges?
I think what, like, it's all, so the system of how, you know, communicate and how you're going to get everyone doing the things is hard, but actually that's what I enjoy the most. I really love, in another world, I would be like an organizational person that would just go into businesses and be like, here's how you organize things. So that was hard to understand, but I loved that puzzle. What I find hard, because I'm just like a sensitive little lamb, is not like realizing that you just can't please everyone. Mm-hmm. And especially with a community that, you know, it's a smaller than, so you kind of know everyone, and you know, and you just want everyone to be happy. Mm-hmm. And what I realized in 6 years is that, you know, the people that started with me, they're not actively, you know, still there as they shouldn't be, you know, things, that's the whole point, is that someone's going to reach a different point, and they're going to go and find an artist mother community, or they're going to go find a different community that does this other thing for them. And I think it's just understanding as the community, like, leader and organizer, that it's just there's an ebb and flow, and you then find, and what I'm realizing now is, like, these tea time sessions, because I just started them a few months ago, and now there's this core group of probably 17 women that come every Tuesday. And I realized, I was like, oh, okay, so this is the new sort of iteration. Like, these are the artists that need this right now. And but it's hard as a human not to be like, well, why hasn't this person come? Or do they think because when we said we weren't doing mastermind anymore, it was hard. Like, that was a really hard thing for me to kind of announce, because that's what I've started as, and I believe in it, and all the things. And it felt like I was just kind of, it felt like I was like lazy. Mm. That's my workaholicisms, right? That I felt like I was saying to people, like, I'm too lazy to do this. Mm-hmm. But now I've kind of found my groove with this, and I can tell that it's helping people, and I'm finding my way. So I think it's hard when you're working in community, because if you want to make changes, and it affects so many people. And with that, you get the good and the bad. And Thrive is the most supportive community. So, like, I will tell you, in 6 years, I've had so little bad. But that's also because I'm a sensitive lamb. So I'm always worried. I'm always afraid. I'm disappointing someone. I can
definitely relate to that. Just the part about, like, women artists being so generous and so supportive. But also, like, when you do disappoint somebody and, you know, they have an opinion that they share with you, it like breaks your heart.
Totally.
You know, there's like, and too, I feel like it's, I mean, I talk about this all the time, just about this identity, like this artist mother, woman artist identity, feeling like, all of the cards are against you in some ways, you know, because you're like a people pleaser to the 10th degree. I feel like you're putting your art out in the world and it's vulnerable and you want to know what people think about it and you're a woman. So you've been trained to like, you know, serve people and make sure they're happy with you. And it's like there's all of these things that like we think we're supposed to be doing and that all of us are like collectively trying to dismantle while also like serving and supporting each other at the same time. So it's just, it's like a lot of energy, you know?
A lot. It's a lot. And then you, and I think I fight, like my biggest journey has been, it has just been about seeing myself. Like I can just feel now when like the frantic energy comes of I need to do more for people and I should be doing like, you know, we had a podcast. We should be doing our podcast again. I should be doing it. I should be doing Instagram lives. Like it just gets out of control. Mm-hmm. And so that's also where I think having Monday, Tuesday as the container for what I will accept for myself has helped me because it just can't trickle into the other days. And that is so important for me because I'll just sit down and do it for days if I'm not
real. I so relate to that. Like, it's like I have to, before it gets out of control and I, because to me, everything is a good idea. Like,
oh, and I have so many of them.
I know. I have so a million ideas for Artist Mother. And we're at a place too in the community where people have good ideas, like people I trust. And I'm like, we should do that, you know? And you know, you just like get the wheels going. But I mean, I don't know. It's like, I like that idea of like, here's the time I've allotted to work on this. And if it doesn't fit within the parameters, it doesn't get done. And that's okay. You know, like,
yeah. And I mean, even to really bring it home with my A-type-ness, I have a checklist. Okay. I have a checklist and I do my checklist. And those are the things that are the minimum, like those have to get done just to be like for Thrive to be functioning. And then I have like a laundry list of stuff that are all these fantastic ideas and those are at the bottom and then I'm allowed to look at those, but again, within the container of the 2 days. So I've kind of figured out, but a system and really over the years I've learned that nothing just happens. So even, especially in community, there are so many, the way you have to communicate a new idea or a change or it's just, you're not selling a product where, okay, the next transaction or the next customer experience, the new change will happen and they'll never know what it was before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas community, it's like, no, you are all used to this one way. You've all bought into this one way. And for, you know, 80% of you, it might not be working, but 20% really want it that same way. So I just think that's been a big thing to realize is I used to be very, it's a great idea. It won't take that long. And my idea of what, you know, time and how long things would take was out of whack. So now Monday, Tuesday, I know at the end of Tuesday, if it took too long, like it didn't get done. So yeah.
Yeah. I like that. And I say this quote all the time. I'm sure people are like sick of me saying it, but my, like one of my favorite quotes from Annie Dillard is how we spend our days is of course how we spend our lives. But it's like, it all comes down to that, you know, like you can't, it's not bigger than what am I doing today?
Yeah.
Like that's literally what it is about, right? You know,
I'm writing this quote down. I've never heard this quote.
Oh my gosh. It's like my favorite. I feel like I say it all the time, or I'm always thinking it, like, because I, you know, in so many conversations I have with like artist mothers and women artists are just about how do we manage our time, right? When we're pulled in so many directions. And I mean, it's all about, you know, what you have and how you spend your day. Like it's not like the big ideas and the projects and like everything is so great, but if it doesn't fit within your day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and if it's not what you ultimately want to spend time doing,
mm-hmm. then it's also very different for me now because I'm a team of one. And so whatever I sign on to or say I'm going to do, I have to physically do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just obsessed with growing and having a pretty large business. And I just, it was just huge. And I read this book that changed kind of everything called The Company of One.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically kind of debunking these ideas that to be successful, you have to run this big company and it needs to be sort of this machine, because what happens is that sometimes you don't even make yourself any more money because you have to continually feed the machine. And so it just really shifted how I saw things, because it really made me question of why. And a lot of it was ego. And so when the ego's in charge, like, you're in trouble. So, yeah, I love that. Like, this idea of, you know, this, whatever you take on, it's you. And mm-hmm. then to go further with your quote, adding that this is your life then, you know, mm-hmm. if this is how you're spending your days, this is how you're spending your life. And is it worth this new initiative or this new thing for you to take on? And I think most of the time the answer would be no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good stuff, Jamie. And I know we're on similar journeys of like just figuring out how it all fits and, you know, working towards things that we really believe in and that we want to do, but also not killing ourselves in the process, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Okay. So you've kind of alluded to this. This is my last question before we do our final five, but this is a new question that I came up with a few days ago, and I'm really excited to integrate it into our interviews because I feel like it's such an interesting one. But you kind of already shared these things, but I think it'd be fun for you to like sum it up in a sentence or two. So where were you 5 years ago, and where do you hope to be in 5 years?
I saw this question. I was like, whoa, whoa. It's a great question. 5 years ago, I was a newbie artist in Vancouver. And the cool thing was that I just had so much vision of what Thrive would be. I think I was struggling to find time to actually make art, and I didn't know what that was.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living on Main Street in a cute little apartment by myself, and my studio was across the street. It was like my dream studio.
Mm.
So I had definitely arrived in some ways in my scope. But it was hard. Just money was always tight. Like, would I have enough money for payroll? Would I have enough money to keep the dream alive? So I was just working to keep the dream alive, I think would be a summary.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, okay. And then where am I going to be in 5 years? This is part two of that.
Yep. Where do you hope to be in 5 years?
Oh, okay. Hope. Well,
remember, we're not in control, Jamie.
Yeah, I know. I was like, I started out being like, well, I will be. And then I'm like, hope. It's all hope. Well, I think what I will say directly, because this is for myself, is like, I will be present and enjoying, and I will be living. Like, those days will be how I spend my life. Like, I will say that confidently, is that it will not be about the big goal and the big future. 'Cause it's like, I'm living it is the hope, I guess. But yeah, family, some babies, and hopefully the nicest dog in the world, because I trained her 5 years ago as a puppy to be really sweet. And my beautiful Blair with me and my family close by, and just, yeah, doing the things that you sweet parents do, you know, spending time. And I know you're probably like laughing because you're like, it has nothing to do with time. Where is the time you speak of as a parent? But yeah, and then I would love Thrive to be helping people and connecting people just as it's doing now. I have no idea how that will be at that point. And I still want to be making art and maybe like more weird big woodcuts and like
that's exciting.
Whole little worlds of flowers.
I was gonna say installations.
Maybe. But
well, we'll see. We'll have to check back
not,
in.
Not worried about it.
Nope.
So okay, wow. I hope that was a
I love it. And it's
like your poor listeners are like, we are in this woman's head because I just here I go.
Yeah, in your head is a good place to be, Jamie. You're a wonderful person. Okay. So thank you for sharing. Okay, final five.
Okay.
Who's your biggest art crush?
Okay, so biggest is Hilma af Klimt. Mm. So Swedish artist, saw her work in New York, obsessed. And then I will throw a man in there because we still love our men, you know, stew quality is Aubrey Beardsley. And he's amazing from a long time ago, but worth saying.
Nice. Okay, what's your favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on?
Well, I love Europe. I just love how old and wonderful it is. And my man, Blair, is a stonemason, and he's never been to Europe. So I want to take Blair to Europe to see stones, big stones.
Yeah, Stonehenge, all the stones.
All stones. I want to go, and we're going to do a stone tour.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, what film or book has inspired you greatly?
I mean, I think I'll just stick to what I said before is The Company of One. I found really interesting shifting mindsets about what we think is success and what's important. So I'll stay with that answer.
Great.
It was a big one. Yeah.
What is your favorite meal?
Ooh, well, so I'm celiac, so I'm gluten-free. So I know the answer, what it would be with gluten. Without gluten, I think it would be, I love French fries. I love them. So I just do a bunch of French fries. And if I could have gluten, I'd have French bread, like a baguette.
Baguette and fries. Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Yep. I have it all.
Okay, Jamie. Finally, in the spirit of community, I just like to offer you a spot to give a shout out to someone who supports you and your work that you want to thank.
Well, I think we have to shout out our girl, Liesl.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Here she is.
Liesl Strauss.
Liesl Strauss. Arkle Rising, just also like what she's built is such a supportive space for women. And yeah, she's the best. So we'll shout out her.
Yep. She's incredible. Love you, Liesl. You're the best. And thanks for sharing Jamie with me.
Yeah, right? She connected us. So
yep, she
there
did.
You go.
Okay. Where can people find you, Jamie?
Yeah, so my art and me is at Jamie Smith Studio on Instagram and then .com for website. And then just to keep things simple, it's Thrive Art Studio. And that's on Instagram and also website. So that's where you can find our community and our online platform. And yeah, that's where I am.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. You're the best.
Thank you again.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.